This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. The semi-private golf club's grand opening was June 20th. That means all 18 holes now open. You can play them all. You can also find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. Rob Hernandez here, Gary D'Amato there. It is getting hot, ladies and gentlemen, where the golf season is certainly heating up. And Gary D'Amato, I think it's getting to the point now where it's Ryder Cup make or break time. Today was supposed to have been D-Day for the build-out, July 6th. So we had Joe Stadler tell you a couple weeks ago that that was the latest they could start building bleachers and putting in the infrastructure to hold this thing in 2020. I get the feeling, Gary, we're going to 2021, even though we still have not yet heard the official announcement. I think it's coming. What's your take on the whole situation?
Yeah, Rob, I it's got to be coming any day. We sort of expect the news maybe even today. But I would suspect by the end of the week for sure we'll know one way or the other. And I agree with you. I lean toward heavily toward it not being played this year and being postponed one year till 2021. And I they're waiting till the last possible minute. I'm sure there's tons of stuff behind the scenes that they have to work out here logistically with sponsor contracts, TV contracts. If it goes to next year, how do they work it into the schedule with an Olympic year again? And with the President's Cup, does that move back a year? And the budgets for the PGA of America and Ryder Cup Europe are tied into the Ryder Cup. There's, you know, tens of hundreds of millions of dollars at stake here. So there's a lot to wade through. And I think that's why it's taken so long to get an announcement. But we're getting to the point where it's going to be made here any day now.
Let's go through pros and cons, Gary, of waiting a year. Obviously, the biggest pro is the fact that right now there's nothing being played. Even the memorial today is announced that it's going to be held without fans. They were supposed to be the first kind of litmus test as to whether, we could have a PGA Tour event with fans. And now even that one is going to be held sans fans. What about the whole spectator end? Is that the biggest pro to waiting a year?
I believe it definitely is the biggest pro to waiting a year because they couldn't do it with fans this year. There's just no way to pack, 40,000 fans shoulder to shoulder onto a golf course. And, Steve Stricker, the U.S. captain, mentioned a couple of weeks ago that, possibly it could be played with 50% of the fans, but then you get into a whole mess of, well, who gives up their tickets? Do they have another random lottery for the random lottery winners? And still, even 20,000 people on a golf course shoulder to shoulder is probably 19,900 too many. So, yeah, that the biggest thing, if we wait a year, hopefully we'll have a vaccine. Hopefully this thing will sort of run its course by then and we'll be able to put a lot of fans on the course at Whistling Straits next year.
Any con at this point, Gary, to waiting a year? I'm kind of to the point now where, regular events played without fans on TV is filling a huge void and a good thing for the game. But I'm even getting nervous about some of the majors coming up here late in the year that they've rescheduled and whether they're going to feel like a major. I certainly don't want that for the Ryder Cup, but are there any cons at this point to just kind of, taking a deep breath and holding on a year?
I think the only con, Rob, is that, the Ryder Cup, the PGA of America announced on January 24th, 2005, that the Ryder Cup was coming to Whistling Straits 15 years later. So here we are 15 years later, and the only con is that we're going to have to wait another year. So patience will have to be a virtue here. I see that as the only real negative at this point because you can't have it without fans. You can't put people in danger or in jeopardy by packing them onto a golf course. And let's just wait a year and do it right and have a great crowd out there at Whistling Straits.
Was it really January 24th of 05, Gary?
I looked it up. It was. Wow. Believe it or not, they announced it 15 and a half years ago. That's when they announced the package of the 2010. They were coming off a successful 2004, PGA Championship at the Straits, and they announced 2010, 2015 PGAs and the Ryder Cup all at once. So 15 years ago, we knew this was coming.
Gary, I just looked it up.
It's been a long wait.
Do you know when Twitter was invented?
Was it that day?
No, it wasn't even alive then, Gary. March of 2006. So we had to wait a whole year to tweet the news to the world. So nobody really knew about it for a year. That's the neat thing. That's incredible. Yeah. You know, and again, the waiting is difficult, but at the same time, I think if I'm Captain Steve Stricker, I'm perhaps thinking that maybe, just maybe, this might actually help me a little bit, because we're starting to see some guys really play well. And I think the guy that is on the tip of everybody's tongue is Bryson DeChambeau, the bigger, I'm not sure faster because he's got a whole lot more weight on it, but certainly stronger version of Bryson DeChambeau circa 2019. This pandemic has created a whole new Bryson DeChambeau, and he wins yesterday in Michigan and does it in the kind of way that I'm trying to figure out whether I like the guy or dislike the guy, Gary. Can you help me out here?
Yeah, that is a good question. You know, I certainly, you know, as Steve Stricker said on the Golf Effect radio show today, he's fascinating to watch, and he really is. And it's like, you know, baseball fans go to baseball games to hopefully see some home runs. And I think golf fans go to PGA Tour events to watch guys like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy hit it out there 330. Well, now we have a guy hitting it out there 360, 370. It's funny, Rob, about 15 years ago, I interviewed Gary Player at the Masters, and we were talking about that very subject. And he said, you know, someday, young man, young player is going to come along and hit it 400 yards. And I started kind of chuckling, and he was serious. And we're not quite to that point, but it's trending that way. And it's a little bit scary. But as far as your question about whether you like him or don't like him, I think Bryson still has to learn some things about professionalism. You know, he chewed out that cameraman this past week for he hit a bad sand shot from the sand from a bunker and slammed his club into the bunker, and then a profanity apparently got on the camera and he went up to the cameraman and basically said, why do you have to film me when I'm having a bad moment? You know, can't you turn your camera off? Well, you know, that's part and parcel of being on the PGA Tour. People want to see reactions to shots, good and bad, and he's got to learn that. You know, he's responsible for his reaction to shots. And if it makes it onto TV, it makes it onto TV. It's not the cameraman's fault. So there's some things he still has to learn, but he sure is an amazing talent.
Yeah, I like the debate on social media. DeChambeau, you know, basically telling this guy that, you know, it's bad for the brand to show that kind of thing. Well, it's not very good for the brand either to show a golfer who, you know, we're supposed to be a mild-mannered bunch. And some of us better at the game than others. Some of us better at being mild-mannered than others. But that one wasn't really good for the brand, in my opinion. That's why I asked the question. And I think I go back to, you know, John Daly. I think for sure, especially, you know, John Daly has made a living on sponsors exemptions on the PGA Tour Champions simply because he was the first guy to really come out bombs away. And the way he won the PGA Championship all those years ago, you know, really endeared him for a lifetime. And DeChambeau could be the next John Daly in that sense. And there's nothing wrong with being a little bit abrasive at times, but at the same time, you know, golf's a game where you want to embrace your champions, the Arnold Palmers, the Jack Nicklauses, the Tiger Woods. And I'm not sure we're quite there yet.
I would agree with you, Rob. You know, Bryson obviously has a ton of talent, and if he doesn't break his back, he's going to be, you know, on leaderboards for many years to come here. But there's just something a little bit, in my opinion now, a little bit off-putting about him. And this isn't the first time we've seen a reaction from him that was sort of negative. It's happened a couple times in the past, and he said a couple things that I think he probably wished he could take back. But I mean, he's still a young man, and he's new to the, you know, relatively new to this big spotlight of the PGA Tour. So I'm sure he's learning on the job. But going back to his length and his distance, it's just incredible, and I think that's the fun part of it. It's fun to watch.
Last question on Ryder Cup. Last point here. Right now, if you're Captain Steve Stricker, you're 2-4-6 automatics with this new format. Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson, Bryson DeChambeau, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Reed. A lot of length in that group there, Gary. And then you've got Gary Woodland, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, and Tony Finau on the outside looking in. You would think that Gary or that Steve Stricker, I was going to know you, the captain, there for a second, Gary. I'm sure you'll have a say in who the captain's picks are.
Of course. Right.
But I'm sure at least four or five of those will go based on points. Steve doesn't like to rock the boat too much, but those first six, that's a pretty impressive group, especially with what you have off the tee and the ability to maybe use that length to an advantage at Whistling Straits.
Rob, this next Ryder Cup team for the U.S. could be kind of like the 2070 Yankees, murderer's row. I mean, the length of some of these guys, DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson and, man, these Woodland, these guys just bomb it out there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Steve loads up on bombers and just says, hey, we're going to pound you into submission, Europe, and let's see if you can handle it. You know, Rory McIlroy hits a long way for Europe, but they don't have nearly as many bombers as potentially the U.S. team does.
Can Herb Kohler build a few more back tees before next year, Jerry? This might actually work out great.
Yeah, whatever. You know, Steve's been out there a couple times to Whistling Straits, and I know he's had some tweaks done to the course. I wouldn't doubt if there's some wide landing areas at about 350, so guys can just bomb it. We'll see.
We will see. Ryder Cup will continue to follow, and of course, when there's an announcement officially, which is what we're all waiting for, we will obviously have coverage on Wisconsin.golf and again maybe another year's worth of coverage on Wisconsin.golf. The PGA Tour event this week, Gary, is the Workday Charity Open. It's a new event. It's a temporary event. It's replacing the John Deere Classic on the schedule. Jerry Kelly is going to make his first start in almost 4 months. He'll join Steve Stricker, who's going to have a nice little 3 or 4 week go of it here on the tour over at Muirfield Village, the first of two, as they used to say in baseball, and a unique format. I mean, a unique situation with playing back-to-back PGA Tour events in the same location. Kudos to Jack Nicklaus, I'm sure, for helping get that done. Your thoughts on, first of all, Jerry Kelly dusting off the clubs after a four-month absence and going out on the PGA Tour to try it out. We've seen Vijay Singh play. We've seen Tom Lehman play. We've seen a lot of other guys, waiting until the senior tour starts up again at the end of the month. Should be fun for Jerry Kelly over at Muirfield Village.
Well, Jerry's got to be dying to play somewhere after all this time off. I'm sure he's champing at the bit to get out there and compete. You know, Muirfield Village is not going to be the easiest place for Jerry to make his debut at, you know, his pandemic debut, so to speak. It's a pretty long course and usually it's pretty soft this time of year. Although there's been a lot of heat in the Midwest, so maybe it's going to be play fast and firm, but if it does play soft, it's pretty long and Jerry's going to have a lot of four irons in the green. So, he's a competitor and I'm sure he's definitely going to be pumped for this. No doubt about it.
Hey, you know, and he's not afraid of a weight room either, buddy. Okay, so don't sell my guy short here. We don't know what Jerry Kelly was doing during the pandemic.
He might come back at 250. You know, you never know, right? With 18-inch biceps.
Yeah, how fast can you pack it on with those protein shakes, Gary? Do you know?
Apparently, DeChambeau can pack on 20 pounds in 3 months. So that's a lot of protein shakes. So.
We never know. It could be. I can't wait to see these senior guys. We haven't seen very much of them lately, so. We'll see what Jerry Kelly has. And, of course, Steve Stricker had a couple good rounds this past week over at the Detroit Golf Club in the Rocket Mortgage. But it kind of – even he admitted it on the Golf Effect tonight, started to maybe lose it a little bit there on the last day. But, you could sense, too, there's frustration in Steve Stricker's voice because, I mean, every year, Gary, he's getting further and further behind off the tee with these guys. I give him credit, though. He's refusing to throw in the towel and just go back out on the Champions Tour. He still feels he can compete. And, you know, if he can get a few putts to fall, maybe he can even the playing field a little bit. But, boy, it is getting tougher and tougher.
It is. You know, his short game is an equalizer, Rob. And when he's putting well, you know, he's one of the greatest chippers who's ever lived. He's a fantastic wedge player and chipper and pitcher. And when he's making putts, you know, he can – he can offset, you know, some of that length disadvantage. But as he said, you know, when the other guy's coming in with a flip wedge and he's got an 8-iron in his hands, you know, the advantage goes to the other guy every time. He loves to compete. He's finding a way to stay relevant and compete out there. And I think he secretly loves to hang around the guys who are half his age and kind of hang with them.
Well, PGA Tour getting going. And as I said, it's getting hot in Wisconsin. I hear your weather is pretty hot back there. I fled it, in the nick of time. Hot and humid, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's any let up here, Rob. It was 90 today. It looks like low 90s with heat index approaching 100 and maybe even topping 100 on several days in a row here. Next week, it looks like we turn maybe to the low to mid 80s, but we're going to have 6 or 7 extremely hot days coming up here.
Well, and of course, as fate would have it on the schedule, we've got a senior event at Black Hawk Country Club in Madison. The WSGA Senior Match Play Championship got underway today with stroke play qualifying. In the regular senior division, Paul Zarek, our good friend from Burlington, shoots a 2-under par 70, and he edges Brian Brugger of Franklin for the number one seed. Dick Regenberg, a longtime member at Blackhawk, shoots even par 72 to finish third. And Mike Murphy, who also was a Blackhawk member back in the day, former Madison City champion, who, by the way, Gary, qualified for the Wisconsin State Amateur last week at the age of 64. Murph with a 73, leading a couple of golfers at that number. The top 32 go on to match play in the seniors, and then it's the top 16 in the super seniors, and they were going to have a playoff for the final spots between four or five guys that tied at 78, but the leader among the super seniors, another guy that we're very familiar with, Tom Zastrow of Greendale, he shoots a 73 to edge Mark Gallibrow of Madison by one shot. So the seniors will have to battle the heat and the tight fairways at Blackhawk Country Club this week, Gary. But I love Blackhawk Country Club as a match play championship course. We saw back in the day, about 20 years ago now, Jerry Kelly won his only WSGA individual title there. And, and we've seen Michael Bilowski, kind of a mid-am type guy a couple years ago win there. You got to think your way around Blackhawk Country Club.
Yeah, didn't Tim Cantwell win his state amateur there, if memory serves?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great golf course. It's going to be fun to watch these seniors handle it. And Paul Zarek, you know, pound for pound, man, that guy, he gets a lot out of. He's not a very big guy. He's like Corey Pavin sized, but when you look at senior results over the last, 6 or 7 or 8 years, Paul's in the mix quite a bit. So good to see his name up there.
And as we are recording this podcast, we're posting to the website a roundup looking back at the WSGA Women's Four Ball Championship, the best ball being played today down at West Bend Country Club. And it was exciting down the stretch. Isabel Malecki and Courtney Matchkey of UW Green Bay win with a 2-under par 71. They knock off UW Stouts Kendra Swanson and Carissa O'Reilly Dye by a shot. Now, Gary, the UW Green Bay duo was on the course ahead of the Stout duo. And on the last hole, first of all, this is classic best ball. Courtney Matchkey does most of the heavy lifting, she told me in a text. Birdied a hole early on the front side, then made two eagles near the turn, and they made the turn in 2-under. She makes another eagle on, another birdie on 14, but then on 18, Isabel Malecki is handling the live scoring on her phone, so she knows where they stand. She makes at that point, they're tied with the two gals from Stout, and she makes a 45-foot birdie putt to go one up. And then O'Reilly Dye and Swanson are playing a couple groups back. Carissa O'Reilly Dye, who was the newcomer of the year in the WIAC last year, she makes she knocks it to within 2 feet on a par 3 17 to have the match, and then she runs into trouble on 18. She winds up making double bogey. Kendra Swanson has about 12 feet down the hill on those old greens at West Bend Country Club, and it slides 4 feet by, lipped out that birdie putt, and then lips out the comebacker, and the two gals from UW Green Bay win by a shot. I love it. You got D1, you got D3. I've always maintained whether it's the men or the women, there's not much difference, and for the WSGA Women's Match Play or Best Ball Championship, drama down the stretch. That's why I love best ball. I don't know what you think about best ball, Gary, but I love it.
Oh, yeah. Love best ball. You know, especially when partners and teammates have, you know, different sort of golf games, and one person can maybe really go hard after birdies, the other person can play for pars. And, yeah, it's a great format. And sometimes you see golfers who aren't, you know, particularly strong in individual events make great partners in best ball events and come to the top in those events. So, yeah, I enjoy that format too, Rob.
And to your point, Gary, Kendra Swanson said that she and Carissa did a nice job of feeding off each other. When one was having a bad hole, the other would pick each other up. Now, Courtney Matchke, on the other hand, said that when she and Isabel Malecki were having good holes, they were both having good holes on the same hole. But then when they had a double bogey there in between those two eagles on the front, they misery did like company in that situation. So they kind of overcame themselves and did enough good things down the stretch to make it happen and win that title. But it does speak to the virtues of best ball. It really speaks to the virtues of team competition. And a neat opportunity for a couple of college teammates to get together and win one there at West Bend Country Club. State Am qualifying today, Gary. Also going on, this one today was held at Oconomowoc Golf Club, which held a state amateur just a couple years ago. And that was won by Peter Florey of Glencoe, Illinois. He shoots a 1-over-par 71 to beat Benjamin Pausha of Delafield. He's a rising senior at Kettle Moraine High School. And Billy McKay of Milwaukee by a shot. And they had 12 qualifiers go there. It took a score of 75 or better to move on to Milwaukee Country Club. Some of the notables that did move on, Hunter Pipik, a former WIA state champion from New Berlin, Jack Blair, the Badger golfer from Wauwatosa, and the Lannan Cannon, Tom Halla, gets through with a 74, Gary. He another guy winning one for the over 50 crowd. I like that.
Yeah, Tom, I saw Tom at the Ray Fisher, and he was proud that he had a top 10 finish there again. He seems like he does that every year, and he was proud to be the old guy, as he called himself, at the Fisher. But, Rob, I've got a question for you. We had an Illinois golfer win the WSJ match play. What happens if an Illinois golfer wins our prestigious state amateur title? Is that a bad thing for the state amateur, or is that a good thing?
Well, I tell you, we have been the we have definitely in Wisconsin rolled out the red carpet for a lot of people from a lot of states, Gary, and that's I'm sure something that'll be much talked about during the off season. All you have to do is join the association. You have to, for these major championships, you have to vow that you're not going to play in the corresponding state championships back in your home state. There's no golf being played in Illinois. Honestly, it goes back to, you know, when we complained about Gene Haas setting up the courses so tough back in his era as the WSGA executive director, it produced four great PGA Tour golfers because of that and some really good amateur golf in the state of Wisconsin. I'd like to think that the upside to this Illinois invasion for 2020 is that it's making the golf better. But at the same time, I know that people are getting a little bit ornery about it and losing spots, especially this year with it being a Milwaukee Country Club year. And I think we might see, I guess if I had to predict, Gary, and you can weigh in, if I had to predict, we may see a rollback on the eligibility requirements to not only being a WSGA member, but having to have some tangible tie to the state of Wisconsin like they've instituted now for the state open, where you either had to have played high school golf or college golf in Wisconsin or have a residence in the state for a certain amount of time. I just think that probably is the better way to go. But at the same time, you know, we keep giving exemptions to Tony Romo, and I love that because it brings great attention to a good guy. I know, you know, he fits that criteria of having grown up in the States, so that he would probably meet that. But, you know, there's a lot of things in play here as the WSGA makes that decision. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think there definitely, Rob, at the end of this year, there's going to be a conversation about changing those eligibility rules for the tournaments. You know, as you talk to Bill Linneman, the director of rules and competitions for the WSGA, he points out that this was a rule put in place for college players years ago and who come from other states and other countries and spend time, you know, live in Wisconsin this summer and go to Marquette or Green Bay or Wisconsin. But it wasn't meant for, sort someone to come across the border from a neighboring state and sort of cherry pick events and then go back and really not have any ties to the state. And I talked to this young man named John Criscio, who played in the Ray Fisher and had a top five. I think he tied for second place, in fact. And he was a member, quote unquote, of Blackstone Creek, but admitted he had never played there. He just entered some scores to get a handicap there. So something's got to be done about those rules. And I think the WSJ is going to be on top of it, and we'll see a change there, I think.
Well, and it's two different issues, Gary, coming from opposite sides of the border. Also today, the second round of the college showcase for juniors up at Whistling Straits was postponed when storms moved through the Sheboygan area as the golfers were on their second nine. And that meant that on the girls' side, Hannah Dunk of Milton, the fine young rising sophomore at Milton High School, is the girls' champion after shooting a 78 yesterday. But the boys' champion also won a WPGA Players Tour event last month there and at Black Wolf Run. That's Bryson Mercier of Powers, Michigan. Bryson was nice enough to write me an email during the offseason. He's very much following the path that Hunter Eichhorn took out of the UP that wound up with Hunter going to Marquette. And Bryson has some great game. The closest place for him to play junior golf is on the Wisconsin PGA Junior Tour. So he has a WSGA handicap through the WPGA Junior Tour, which they have for all kids who join the WPGA Junior Foundation. And so I don't have a problem with that. And in fact, I believe Eric Reno, a kid who played for Dennis Tiziani back in the day at the University of Wisconsin, came to the UW on an Evans scholarship. You know, he wanted to play. He was from Menominee, Michigan, and he wanted to play in events in Wisconsin for much the same reason. And I think the rule was tweaked for that reason. And so you've got, you know, kind of one issue going on up there between the UP and our northern border, and then a whole other issue when Illinois decides they're not going to play the state amateur or their state match play, and you've got golfers filtering in and paying the $30 or $35 to join the association. So I hope they don't cut off the avenue for some of these, some of these golfers that, you know, have a legitimate reason. But, you know, if you're just killing time while your state's trying to figure out COVID-19, you know, I think it's been good for a year, but I don't think I would like to see this be an annual thing.
I agree with you, Rob. I think it's fine for this year. There are definitely extenuating circumstances that nobody could have foreseen. But when you have guys coming over the border who have never really played any competitive golf in Wisconsin and entering our state association events, that's something that needs to be looked at. And you're right. It's completely different when you talk about guys playing who live, you know, 3 miles over the border or 8 miles over the border in the UP and are playing all their junior golf in Wisconsin or most of it. That's a different situation than what we had this year with some of the players from Illinois coming up. So I agree with you.
Well, we've had a lot about competitive golf, and you are listening to Talking.Golf, our weekly podcast sponsored by the Club at Loch Lebel, one of the oldest and most beautiful golf courses in the whole state of Wisconsin. Remember, the club was just recently restored and recreated, and they recently had their grand opening. All 18 holes are now open. Gary D'Amato's played the course. He can vouch for the fact that it is one of the finest facilities that you and I can both play. And all 18 holes now open. You can find out more on its website at clubatlochlebel.com. Speaking of golf courses, Gary, your review this week is one that we've written a lot about this year because they went from a totally private facility to, again, another one with public access, a great trend this year in 2020 in the state of Wisconsin, Oshkosh Country Club. Your initial thoughts playing a course that maybe you probably didn't even know was up there in the Great Fox Valley.
You know, it's interesting. I had heard of Oshkosh Country Club, but never even got close to it. I mean, I knew it was private. It was one of the founding members of the WSGA, you know, over 120 years ago. And, you know, it's been private the entire time until this year. So I was really anxious to get up there and get a look at it at a course that I'd never played, never been close to, and found it to be a delight, Rob. It was when you're a private club that long, you might, as I wrote in my review, you might think there's a case of snobitis maybe going on at a private club like that. But I found just the opposite to be true. Very welcoming, very young staff led by Donnie Sell, the club manager. And just had a blast out there. It's a old line, tree lined golf course, very walkable, greens close to tees, and finishes with a nice par three right under the clubhouse. People on the patio out enjoying a nice steak dinner from TJ Steakhouse there at the club, watching golfers finish. I think it's, if you haven't played it, you owe it to yourself to get up there. It's $60 weekdays with a cart. The only day the public cannot play is Thursday. That day is for members, and they also have preference on Saturday morning tee times. But anytime else, public's welcome to go up there and play.
And $65 on weekends plus cart, and $60 weekday, I think is a good fee to pay for that. We should mention too that TJ's Highland Steakhouse has always been public now for a couple of years since an ownership change of the club, and so part of the community has gotten a glimpse of the facility. Now they're able to get able to play the entire golf course. I think that's a cool thing. And I had a chance to talk to Donnie Sell at the Chicago Golf Show over the winter, and they really went hard at the Chicago market to let them know that if you're headed up to Door County or you're headed up to the North Woods, stop off, play Oshkosh Country Club. And I'm glad to hear that you found it to be good. I've only had a chance to walk it, obviously the home course for UW Oshkosh. So when my daughter was in college, I was able to see the tight tree line fairways. I actually was glad I wasn't playing it, Gary, because in places it just felt really, really tight. Did you get that feeling? I mean, is it one of those old courses that the trees have been allowed to grow, and every year it feels more and more like you're playing in a hallway?
Yeah, I'm definitely not long off the tee, Rob, as you know, but even some holes took the driver even out of my hands because, sure. There's trouble at, on a couple of holes at like 210, 220 yards, and the fairways get pinched. The first hole is a good example. There, water sort of comes into play, kind of creeps out into the fairway at about 225. So if you bomb a drive on that hole and you hit it right down the middle or slightly left, you're going to be in the water. So you have to think your way around that golf course. And Donnie was saying, the members know how to play it. They played it for years, but he gets a kick out of watching first-time players pull out driver on every hole and smash away and then realize, oops, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Well, again, if you're scoring along at home, our podcast sponsor, the Club at Lac La Belle, once a private club in Oconomowoc. You've got Oshkosh Country Club, and then I'll be writing about it later in the year, Bullseye Golf Club now in Wisconsin Rapids. My old home course is also, switched to public access, and with the clubhouse open to the public as well, set on the Wisconsin River. Great views. I mean, this isn't far from Lake Winnebago. It's just really, we're spoiled, Gary. Every year, on top of the great destination courses we have in the state, more and more of the old-time traditional courses are becoming available to the public. Timber Ridge and Minocqua a couple years ago, another one that switched from private to public when Minocqua Country Club kind of took over the 18-hole private market. I just love what the options available to us.
Well, we've lost some courses in recent years, Rob, so when these private clubs go semi-private and public can play them, it's really like, as I wrote in the Oshkosh Review, for the vast majority of the region's golfers, it's like a new golf course opening, which is exactly what it is when a private club, starts allowing public play. So more power to these clubs who are, some of them, maybe the membership has declined a little bit and they have to find new ways for revenue. So they're opening their doors to the public. And it's like a brand new golf course construction for a lot of people who have never set foot on those golf courses. So it's great.
And last thing about Oshkosh Country Club, Gary, I'm checking for directs from Southern California to into Appleton. Wisco Wednesdays at OCC, $45. Yeah. You get 18 holes with a cart. Hot dogs are $1. Brats and beer are $2. Gary, sign me up.
And make that your first stop next time you fly into Appleton, Rob.
Exactly. Before we leave the topic of courses, we'll continue to follow the Bull, which has been now sold to John Dunphy and Randy Groth, a couple of Milwaukee area businessmen who have stepped in and saved the course in Sheboygan Falls. I believe Dennis McCann hoping to talk to one or both of the new owners about when it is expected to open yet this summer. Gary, there'd be another one. If we can get the Bull open, it is win-win-win all the way around.
Well, the Bull is one of my favorites, Rob. I was there during construction, and I got to tour the course with Jack Nicklaus when he was designing and building it. And you know, the Bachman family, it's unfortunate that David Bachman wasn't able to hold on to the golf course, but he did a great thing by building that course up there, and I can't wait till it reopens, and I can't wait to get up there and play it again.
And last but not least, as we talk courses, you had a great story over the weekend. We've got a new course coming at Trapper's Turn. It's 12 holes. We talked a little bit about it last week and in the past, but Andy North is designing it. It's an executive course. It's a par 3 course. It seems to be the rage between building hotels and places that golfers can stay on property, which I believe is also in the works at some point here for Trapper's Turn. Having short courses like we have at Sand Valley with the Sandbox and other places is also in vogue. And what can you tell us about what you saw at Trapper's Turn, and how much fun are we going to have playing the, I like it, what is it, the 12 North? Is that the new name?
12 North, yeah, 12 holes, and obviously Andy North's name is going to be on it. Rob, it's going to be a lot of fun to play because there's no formal tee markers. There's just suggested teeing grounds where, you know, you can make a hole 100 yards or 80 yards or 50 yards. You can tee off from wherever you want. And it's basically U.S. Open style greens that you'll be able to hit, you know, with 40 and 50 and 60 yard shots. So, you know, there's triple tiered greens. There's a boomerang green that serves two holes with a big tree sort of bisecting it. There's a punch bowl green. I mean, every kind of trick you can imagine. Andy North has sort of made this a major championship venue at one quarter scale is kind of what I wrote. And it's going to be a lot of fun to play.
I love it. I love it. Can't wait to get up there. Can't wait to play it once it is done. It's supposed to open early in 2021, correct?
Yes, they're looking at late spring, early summer next year. It would have been opened. They would have had a soft opening this fall, Rob, but construction was halted during the pandemic and for 3 months, and just basically restarted about a month ago. So they're behind their original schedule. And so now it won't be until, you know, May or June probably of next year that they'll open it.
And piece of advice, Gary, make sure you play it on a Friday. Trappers with the best fish fry in the Dells. I don't know. I've heard it. I can't tell you that I've been there more than, you know, a dozen or 25 times.
All things, Gary, are good.
It's great food. Before we wrap up, by the way, Talking.Golf, again, sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle over there in Oconomowoc, all 18 holes now open. Be sure to check out their website, clubatlaclabelle.com, and get over there and play the new and improved Club at Lac La Belle. Some good things happening, Gary. We'll close on this note. First of all, we need to give a birthday shout-out. 70 years old, Steve Howe, who you wrote about earlier this year, dueling his wife, Carolyn Barnett Howe, with back-to-back holes in one on the same holes down in Florida. Steve turned 70 today, so a happy birthday to him. And you wrote about a neat thing over the weekend. We asked you last week about 4th of July traditions in terms of golf, and you didn't have any, but you went out and talked to a guy who has one that is a pretty special tradition, Carl Meyer, over there at Chinico. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Carl's been up to and how many holes he tries to play on the 4th of July?
Yeah, for 13 years, Rob, now, he's been playing at least 100 holes on the 4th of July. He played 180 holes, you know, 10, 18-hole rounds 1 year. And he played 113 holes this year on the 4th because he tries to play 100 holes, and this was the 13th year, so he played 13 additional holes. But the reason he does this is to raise funds for Hire Heroes USA, which places military veterans in jobs when they get out of service. Carl told me that the unemployment rate for military veterans is 4 times what it is for the general population. So, you know, these guys get out of the military and they have skills, but they're not sure how or where their skills apply in the working world. And so Hire Heroes USA teaches them interview techniques, teaches them how to do resumes, and helps them land jobs in the working world. And so Carl has single-handedly over 13 years raised nearly $1 million for that cause. So hats off to Carl for that.
Well, great job by him. And then over the weekend, I was able to keep tabs from afar on Pearson Hunt, the two-time WIA state champion out of Heartland. He's headed to the University of Illinois this fall. He teamed up with Cameron Huss to captain a couple of junior golf teams over at Whistling Straits in the second annual Wisconsin Cup. That raises money, Gary, for the Wisconsin PGA Junior Foundation, the MAC Fund, and the AJGA ACES program. Pearson explained it to me that that ACES program allows kids who otherwise wouldn't have the money to afford the travel and the hotel stays and even the entry fees on the AJGA to be able to do so. And this year they raised $50,000. They had 28 kids. It was 24 boys, 4 girls from Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota, and playing in a Ryder Cup format. So there was some type of Ryder Cup competition on the grounds at Whistling Straits in 2020, and it was all for a good cause. They raised over $50,000. And if you go to our website and look at the story about Pearson Hunt winning his junior golf finale, he managed to outduel Cameron Huss, who's headed to Wisconsin in a 3-2 singles match on Sunday, and actually on Saturday. And Pearson, captain, quote-unquote, Team Illinois. Cameron Huss, because he's going to be a Badger, captain, quote-unquote, Team Wisconsin. That didn't mean that they were all Illinois golfers or all Wisconsin golfers. It was just in honor of where those kids are headed for college, and kudos to them. And now, Gary, because of NCAA rules, they really can't have a big involvement in charity fundraisers now once they get to campus. So they turned the baton over to Bennett Swavely, last year's WSGA junior champion from Hudson, who recently committed to the University of Minnesota, and to Jacob Beckman out of Middleton, who will be going to Wisconsin in 2 years. And they will be the captains for Team Minnesota and Team Wisconsin, respectively, next year. I can't think of a better legacy to leave as a junior golfer. Pearson Hunt is one of the more, you know, bigger picture guys that I've come across at his age in my many years of covering golf. And for him to be able to work with the MAC Fund to secure Whistling Straits, to have a fundraiser, and now to hand it off so that this thing can continue, that's pretty cool. I talked to someone today. There weren't many junior events available to you and me, Gary, when we were growing up, and now you've got not only individual events almost every day of the summer, but kids with the opportunity to give back in some way, shape, or form. And in 2 years, the Wisconsin Cup has generated over $82,000 for those three charities. Again, a pretty neat story coming out of Whistling Straits over the weekend.
So impressive, Rob. Those young boys, young men and women, so impressive that they are so selflessly raising money for charity. And you're right about Pearson. You've dealt with him a lot more than I have, but in my dealings with him, he's mature beyond his years, on and off the course. And I'll tell you one little story about Pearson, Rob. I was out at the practice station in New Berlin. I'm working on a story on TrackMan Range that John Bauer has installed there. That'll be coming up in the next week on Wisconsin.golf. But John has worked with Pearson since Pearson's family moved, into Wisconsin a few years back. And John took me out to a place. He said, I want to show you something, Gary. And he took me out to a spot where Pearson has practiced. And I'll tell you what, Rob, the quality of the divots and the divot pattern, it's right up there with the best guys on the PGA Tour. It's very impressive seeing these 5 feet long divots in the perfect lines, one next to each other. So, but Pearson, very impressive young man. And kudos to all the young men and women who raised money at that event.
Well, and he's hoping to be able to see you next month at the Wisconsin State Open. He's got a brief schedule this year because of COVID. He's hoping that, I believe it's the Southern Amateur is first up. They're supposed to make a decision on whether that'll be played. And then, of course, the Western Amateur. He had his title defense at the Western Junior Championship canceled earlier this summer. So for a lot of these guys who have aspirations of making the jump to college golf, there isn't a whole lot to stay sharp. But Pearson Hunt looked like he was in good shape last weekend with a couple of good matches in his Wisconsin Cup. But man, it's tough for these kids, Gary, because all of a sudden the options that you kind of map out your summer and now you've got to kind of retool. And by the time you do that, a lot of these things are full that you would otherwise play in, or you just can't make it work, schedule wise. It is a different summer.
Yeah, and I can't wait till Pearson gets to Illinois and starts working with Coach Mike Small up there, or down there, I should say. And, John Bauer's worked with Pearson for a long time, but John was telling me, it's time for him to spread his wings a little bit and get another set of eyes on him. And, he's only going to continue to improve, and it's going to be exciting to see what he does in his collegiate career at Illinois.
It sure is. It sure is. Well, Gary, I think we've come to we've gone beyond our allotted time here on Talking.Golf. Appreciate the time. We'll continue to follow the Ryder Cup situation, and we'll check in again with you next week.
All right. Lots of good stuff, Rob. Thanks.
Thanks. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members. Lac La Belle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. Don't forget, the semi-private golf club held its grand opening on June 20th. That means you can now play all 18 holes of a great golf course, and you can do it by checking out their website at club@laclabelle.com. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you again next week.